I'm going to ask Robin, then Stephanie, Terry, then Susan to talk about specific issues that they're working with and encountering with this new disability legislation. Robin's going to give a quick overview of the practical issues, some strategies that they've been developing to deal with it. Stephanie's going to talk about how so many people have responded to these letters just by freezing and are unable to move forward and start to tackle it, and the strategies that they're looking at. Terry's talking about some education strategies to get up there and alert doctors and assessors and agencies about the new legislation, what it means, how to get themselves up to speed on what the legislation requires now. And Susan's going to talk about the specific problems that the legislation and the process mean for people in the downtown east side. So, Robin.
Thank you, Diane. I've been told I've only got 5 minutes, which for a lot of you is going to be a great relief. So I'm going to really try and focus my, points on really some of the issues that as we see them, I see them. I'm not going to spend a lot of time going over the nuts and bolts. I'm hoping that all of you have had a chance to see the application form. If you haven't, I must commend Penny on doing an excellent job of putting together the information package that was on the back table there. It includes a copy of the application form. It includes the crack, our attempt by the coalition of putting together a self-help application guide specially targeted to people who are being quote-unquote reassessed. It includes with the blue letters, letter to assessor and letter to doctor. Also, Skylark out of Kamloops, there's some materials here that she's put together that I think advocates will find useful. In terms of these information materials that are being made available, certainly the coalition is putting a date on them and saying, okay, we did this on October 10th, because we'll probably have to do one on November 10th saying, okay, this is what we've learned over the last month. Now, what we know has happened here, 18,000 people, approximately 50-some-odd thousand people on DB2, received a letter with a reapplication form saying the ministry wants more information in order for someone to continue to receive disability benefits, which they now call persons with disabilities designation or benefit, as opposed to DB2. They have been given until January the 15th to get the application form mailed in. Of course, they can send it in later, but if that happens, then they're going to be facing a reduction in benefits April and beyond. According to the letter they sent out to community agencies, there will be no changes in the rates for people who are currently on DB2 prior to April 2003. So theoretically, if you get this form in by January 15th and you continue to be approved for disability, then you'll continue to receive benefits and beyond. If you're denied, then you'll see probably a reduction in your check at the end of April, which will be your May check. Now, whether people will fit into the PPMB or whether they will go down to basic benefits, we don't know. I mean, that's a whole issue we'll have to deal with at that time. But the fact of the matter is, as Dr. McGregor has pointed out, 18,000 people going through the system in a three-month period is not only puts a huge strain on the individuals involved, but on the system itself and on the medical professionals that are having to fill out these forms. We are trying to put together materials to help people, but until we get some of the forms back and finding out what the Ministry of Human Resources is actually doing in terms of actually assessing the forms and how they're doing it, then right now, basically, we're giving people common sense advice. Make sure that your doctor is informed of your situation. First of all, make sure that your doctor will even fill out the form. If you don't have anyone that fits the criteria of a health professional, then you're going to have to ask your doctor to fill out the assessor section as well. We said, what happens, we asked the health assistance branch, what happens if you don't fill out the assessor section and you send it in with the doctor section and part one that you fill out, those two sections alone? You can say, well, look, in some cases there'll be enough information provided under section two by the doctor. They said, if the assessor section is not filled out, they will send the application form back. They will not adjudicate it. Now, whether this can be challenged later on, I don't know. But, I mean, this is the reality that we're dealing with right now. I spoke to Bob at Health Assistance Branch this morning.
And what about Bob?
Bob.
Bob who? Just Bob?
Bob actually is one of the guys that actually designed the bloody form in the first place.
Now you know who to turn.
But also, yeah, he's fielding some of the calls from the health professionals that are coming in on the 800 lines. Bob is finally getting the message that there's some problems here. He actually said to me, oh, we haven't got many forms in, like the new forms in yet, but we've looked at the ones so far, and the doctors haven't done a good job of filling them out. Well, lo and behold, he said, we may even have to change our guidelines for assessing these applications because we're not getting the right information. Now, whether Bob will say this publicly, I don't know, but that's kind of what he said to me over the phone. What we're saying to people, what we've been saying to people over the last 2 weeks, especially, you know, with the new form, do not rush off this week to get this form filled out by your doctor. In my opinion, it is better to wait a few weeks, maybe even a month or so, until we find out more information about how this system is working. Don't wait till December 15th. I mean, Christmas and New Year's is the worst time to approach doctors about getting the form filled out. But the more, in a month from now, I'm really hoping that we have a better understanding of how this process works. Looking at the actual application form, it's so difficult to see how these stupid questions fit with the actual definition. And crucial questions about how much is enough. Like, if you walk with a cane, that's an assistive device, right? If you walk with a cane, walking with a cane, is that enough to get disability? I suspect that it's not. How does the mental health criteria apply? How much of that do you need in order to be considered to have, you know, a disability as far as Ministry of Human Resources is concerned? There's so many unanswered questions. And I know I'm running out of time, Diane. Okay. So that's my bit.
Thank you, Robin.
Yeah.
Stephanie. Hi. Okay, I work for the Kettle Friendship Society, which provides services to people with mental illness who are living in the community. So all of the clients we're assisting through the reapplication process are clients with mental illness, although many of them have other illnesses or disabling conditions as well. So we've been trying to develop specific strategies for clients with mental health disabilities. One of the things that has surprised me initially is that we expected people to start appearing at our office with their letters in hand demanding immediate assistance. What's happening instead is that a lot of our clients are receiving the letter and the application and freezing, not taking any action at all because they're too terrified and it's too destabilizing for them. We have clients who, you know, had been on assistance for 20 years before they actually were able to get their gumption up to apply for disability benefits. We have clients who spent 3 months trying to complete Part A of the old application, right? So these clients are going to have a really difficult time getting through this process, and we're having to do outreach to them, like check in with them, see if we can reel them in, right? Try to capture the people who are going to fall through the cracks. And so one of the ways we're doing that is to try to break it down into something manageable, you know, even if you're not ready to do part, you know, the first part of the application, call someone, tell someone you've been asked to reapply, you know, call an advocate. Right, call your doctor, right? So we can at least get people hooked in and go from there. One of the things that came out of the conference call that Robin was referring to that we had with the folks from the Ministry of Human Resources is that they are saying that If a person meets the severity and duration tests and the age tests, right, even if their only functional impairment is a significant impairment in social functioning, that will be sufficient to qualify a person for benefits. This is, of course, extremely important for persons with mental illness, right? Now, do I believe them? Not entirely, right? But we're having to develop strategies like really hitting on impairments in social functioning. Now, granted, mental illness can also cause a lot of, you know, corollary functional impairments. If you're too depressed to get out of bed, you don't get your dishes done. And those are the kinds of things we're going to address in the applications as well, right? What's going to be different for clients with mental illness often is that instead of needing an assistive device or a person, you know, who comes in and assists them directly, the assistance that they receive may be in the form of medication prescription monitoring, right, ongoing contact with a mental health team, right, friends, you know, backup support for when they're severely depressed or anxious or suicidal, right. Those aren't direct assistance with specific tasks, but the legislation doesn't require direct assistance. It just requires that you need help in order to perform those tasks. So indirect assistance is something we're going to be looking at a lot for our clients. Our practice has always been to conduct a fairly lengthy initial interview and make a substantial attachment to Part A with specific information as well in letters to doctors and assessors. That's generally not going to change. What the coalition has done here on their help sheet for the designation review, if you turn to the letter to doctors on page 6, right? This looks a little bit like some of what we're doing. Ours is going to be somewhat different, right? What we're going to do is assist the clients with the tick box portions of the form in situations where the doctor will find it helpful for the client to have done some kind of self-assessment. But what we don't want to do is let the way the ministry structured the form to determine how we get information from our clients, because that's a trap, right? So we're going to continue to elicit information from our clients that we think is relevant. And in the sections of the form that require narrative, where we anticipate that doctors are probably going to have the most difficulty, right, we're going to provide direct language to the doctors that's specifically related to that person's situation and their disabling conditions, right? Because, like, if you look at the form, right, it's like, for example, the doctor's section, let's go to page, page 9, the health history, right? Please indicate the severity of the medical conditions relevant to this person's impairment. Well, what I think we're going to need here is diagnosis A, severe. Diagnosis, you know, right? They're going to want that really kind of explicit stuff, right? If there's a cumulative effect of a series of, you know, possibly moderate impairments, if the cumulative effect is severe, then that's going to have to be explicitly noted. And that's one of the things that we're going to need to direct doctors to say, right? Later on when you get to page 11, right, please provide additional comments regarding the degree of restriction. They're going to need to include language that's drawn directly from the legislative requirements in order for the application to be successful, right? One other thing that we will continue to do that we did with our previous applications is create a checkbox form that uses the specific legal, like, legislative wording, right, so that the doctor can explicitly agree that the patient meets the legislative criteria, right? The way that we get around doing that with doctors is that we explain to them that, you know, what we're doing is bridging two discourses, right, medical and legal. Right? And, you know, this kind of direct connection is the kind of thing that gets applications accepted. It worked extremely well for us before, and I anticipate it will continue to work well for us now. So, that relates actually to some weirdness in the wording of the definition of person with disabilities in the legislation, but I think I've gone over time, so maybe
go
I should
ahead.
Do that later.
Just go ahead.
Okay.
Brief,
well, what's different is, I've just been looking at this, I've been talking to some of my colleagues about this, and I was talking to Roxanne about this earlier. It used to be that there was a set of, you know, characteristics that a person had to have in order to be qualified, right? And the minister was the person who had the authority to decide whether or not the person met those criteria. But if you look at the language now, it says that the minister has to be satisfied that the person has a severe mental or physical impairment that, in the opinion of a medical practitioner, is likely to continue, you know, in the, et cetera, right? In the opinion of a health professional, et cetera. So what I see happening here is that the test isn't so much satisfying the minister that the person directly and significantly restricts, you know, the person's disability, you know, has certain effects on their life. The test really is satisfying the minister that a health professional has that opinion. And I think that what's going on here is that they've actually given themselves less discretion by drafting it this way. I think that they probably didn't intend to. I think it's just really sloppy drafting. But I think that that will also provide us an awful lot of opportunities when we go to appeal.
Thanks.